First, for the last week, two news stories regarding children who cross the U.S. border illegally and unaccompanied have garnered national attention. One story involves a recent lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union, which alleges widespread abuse of children along the border. The other story that made headlines was a report that claimed that some 1,500 children taken into custody along the border fell through the cracks and are unaccounted for. Authorities with the Department of Health and Human Services disputed that claim earlier this week. But these two stories, both involving the way children are allegedly treated when they cross the border, illuminates possible issues with America's immigration system and what rights children have when they do make it to the states. Uzumaka Enzalibe is a clinical associate professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law and is also a staff attorney with the Children and Family Justice Center of the Bloom Legal Clinic. Uzumaka, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Judith, for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So let's start with that news story that has gotten so much attention, the 1,500 children that were allegedly lost by immigration authorities. We want to start with this because this issue has been refuted by the Department of Health and Human Services. So help us get to the truth here. What has happened with these children? What's the situation?
So let's take a step back for just a moment, and let me just sort of tell you who these children are. So when children are found at or near our border or apprehended at or near our border, the U.S. government detains them, and the agency that's sort of responsible for detaining these children is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. These children are detained until the government can find a sponsor, and usually the sponsor is a parent or other relative. And then these children are released to the sponsor, but when they are released, they still sort of have to keep their immigration case going. So release to a sponsor doesn't necessarily mean that you have the right to remain in the United States. And so what the Office of Refugee Resettlement does is that it does like a follow-up call 30 days after a child is released from custody. And this sort of 1,500 number sort of came up as a result of some testimony given by Stephen Wagner. And basically what he was talking about was that between October 2017 and December 2017, the Office of Refugee Resettlement called about 7,635 kids. And when they placed these calls, about 6,000 kids remained with their sponsors, but about 1,475 kids, or about 19% of the kids, couldn't determine the whereabouts of those 1,500 kids. Now, there could be lots of different reasons why those 1,500 kids, their whereabouts couldn't be determined. What my sense is that the rhetoric around sort of targeting sponsors and the Trump administration has said that they will sort of go after sponsors for smuggling kids may make it very difficult for people to sort of answer calls from the government, right? So if the government comes calling to ask about the kids, one reaction somebody might have is, look, I don't want to talk. I don't want to participate in this follow-up call. Another common thing that I've seen just through my practice is that my clients tend to change their numbers frequently. So I've had the same cell phone number for many years, but I will say that, in representing a client for like 5 years, that during that 5-year period, the client may have like 5 or 6 different numbers because maybe they have like a pay-as-you-go phone. Mm-hmm. And so those are some sort of plausible explanations why these 1,500 kids are missing. And, I think the news that we've seen sort of suggests that they're kind of like lost or they went on a field trip and all of them disappeared. But what really is happening is that the government is calling after really harsh rhetoric about the things that they will do to sponsors, and some people are not responding, which sort of makes sense.
And also, I want to back up just a little bit because it feels like it was probably about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, that we were hearing about the numbers of unaccompanied minors at the border increasing drastically and there being a real problem with trying to move them through the system and that there was this backup. Are these some of the kids that we're talking about?
Sure. So these are the kids that are part of the surge, but they could also be kids that are sort of more, because it's a 30-day follow-up call. I'm suspecting that most kids only spend about 50 days in OR custody and detention, and so these are probably kids who crossed the border more recently if the call was being made between October 2017 and December 2017. But all of these kids that are coming for the same reasons, right? So we experienced a surge in in 2014 because the kids were fearful of a lot of gangs in Central America. And so these kids are probably coming for the same reasons that those kids came for in 2014.
As you said, a lot of these children are coming unaccompanied, but that doesn't mean that they don't have family or relatives here in the U.S. already. They might be coming later than those other family members, and that they are often released into the care of one of those adults that they have a relationship with. What do those adults need to do to become that sponsor, to be able to prove that they are a person who should be allowed to collect a particular child?
So a lot of times the adults that are stepping forward are parents, and so the ORR will do a background check, and sometimes if there's a red flag for whatever reason, ORR may take a step further and do sort of a home study. If the person who's stepping forward to sponsor the child is not a parent or maybe just a relative or a family friend, there's probably a little bit more of a check done just to make sure this person is safe and it's somebody that the child should be released to.
We're talking with Uzomaka Enzalibe. She's a clinical associate professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law, and she's also a staff attorney with the Children and Family Justice Center of the Bloom Legal Clinic. And so the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or as you were saying, what is their general track record with children? Is this an organization that has proven itself able to dispose these cases well and to keep track of the children that they have in some way become responsible for?
You know, the ORR has had some problems in the past. There was a case of kids being released to sponsors in Ohio, and it turned out that they were, you know, being forced to work under horrific conditions. So ORR has had those problems in the past, but a vast majority of kids are being released to their parents, and so I think we have to strike a balance between making sure that the people who are the kids are being released to are safe, but also not keeping kids in detention, right? So I, as an advocate for children, I want kids to be released to safe environments, but I also don't want kids to spend an inordinate amount of time in ORR custody, which is, you know, really just, you know, a detention as far as my clients are concerned. And so that has to be balanced. Those two things have to be balanced, not having kids in detention, but also making sure that kids are being placed safely.
So if kids are in detention, what does that mean exactly? Are they in a group setting? Are they, you know, is it kind of, as we would imagine, a detention center for adults, except everyone is a minor?
So, no. And when I say detention, I'm speaking from the perspective of the children that I represent, which is any time that you're not allowed to leave when you want to, and the door is closed, it feels like detention. But a vast majority of the kids are kept in group homes. And ORR does have some facilities that are sort of more secure facilities, but most kids are kept in group homes. And what that looks like, when I used to go to the detention center to do intake to senior rights presentations, is that they're bunk beds and kids have like a uniform that they wear and they have times that they're supposed to eat. And there's maybe some English as a second language classes that, you know, that they try to provide to kids with lots of different proficiencies. But I think what makes a detention is how some of the kids feel who are there, which is that you can't just open the door and step outside and sort of walk around when you want to.
And there have been some concerns that some of those children, the 1,500 who cannot be accounted for, that some of them may have been trafficked. And certainly there's a growing awareness of trafficking and that it may be much more common, unfortunately, than we may have thought. What are the safeguards in place to make sure that children who are in this vulnerable position are not ending up being trafficked or in other, you know, equally horrible situations?
So I think there are places in the system where they do sort of specifically screen for trafficking. From the time a child enters at the border, the border officials who interact with that child should screen for trafficking. And while the child is in ORR custody, that child should also be screened for trafficking. And then ORR should also do a background check and screen for trafficking. But I think, as a lawyer, that the kids who have lawyers, right, and are represented mm-hmm. are do well, right? They report, they go to court. The lawyer kind of provides that safeguard because the person is coming in to talk to an adult about their case, and that really kids should not be navigating the system without lawyers. And having a lawyer in place goes a long way in making sure that kids not only are have their day in court and their due process rights are protected, but also kind of make sure the kids are safe and are participating in their legal process.
And how do kids get a lawyer? And who are the kids that don't have access to one?
Sure. So we don't have a right to appointed counsel in immigration, so because it's considered a civil proceeding. And a lot of times the kids that I represent, the way that I find out about them is sometimes when they're released from the detention center, I may get a call from the detention center saying that a kid has been released. Oftentimes kids are relying on their sponsors to go and seek legal help. And so kids are particularly vulnerable because so many times they are relying on adults to sort of do the right things, to take them to court, to seek legal help. And the kids who are not represented are the kids who aren't able to find lawyers. And my concern is that a lot of kids who may be outside a very big city go unrepresented because the ability to find a lawyer in those places is extremely difficult.
Well, and their sponsors may have a very hard time negotiating and navigating that system themselves.
Yes, certainly. That, you know, we are expecting kids to do something incredibly complicated. I always joke that my students who are often second and third year law students don't quite understand how to get asylum, and they've had one solid year of law school, let alone the kids who may have you know, very little formal education and their sponsors. And now add to that, you know, just sort of the lack of information, but also the fear, because there's so many rumors of policies and policies that are coming down that says if we find you, we will deport you. And so it just makes it so difficult for both the sponsors and the kids to seek help. And so I think these policies will have an incredibly detrimental effect because we now have people who are living in the shadows. And what we know is that when people live in the shadows, lots of bad things can happen in the shadows. So, you know, those policies also have that effect.
We're talking with Uzumaka Nzalibe right now. She's a clinical associate professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law. She's also a staff attorney with the Children and Family Justice Center of the Bloom Legal Clinic. And she's with us to talk about what rights children have when they cross into the U.S. illegally. And that's in light of two major news stories. The first being the 1,500 children that are alleged to be missing by U.S. immigration authorities. And the second is a new report from the ACLU alleging the abuse of children by Border Control. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you make of these two stories? What questions do you have about these issues? And what do you think should change? Or do you think that immigration authorities are acting as they should? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We continue our conversation now about the rights children have when they cross the border into the United States illegally, as well as issues that these children face that brought them here and the challenges that await them. Our guest is Uzumaka Nzalibe. She is a clinical associate professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law and is also a staff attorney with the Children and Family Justice Center of the Bloom Legal Clinic. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think these stories say about how the United States handles immigration issues? Are you for or against the practices that are currently in place at the border? We'd like your questions and your opinions. Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Uzumaka, let's move on to the ACLU story. That's the other story that's been making the rounds. It regards a recent report released by the American Civil Liberties Union, which alleges that children that have crossed the border have faced widespread abuse. They point to abuse from Border Control during the Obama administration. And I know it can be difficult to talk about and for people to hear, but what kind of abuse are we talking about that's been alleged?
So I would say that the report kind of pointed to sort of excessive use of force. So there were incidents where they reported their kids were kicked in the head or tasers were used inappropriately. And also the report kind of pointed to sort of a lot of verbal abuse. So they kids were called, you know, things that you and I can't say on public radio. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be said to any child, especially a child who's fleeing a traumatic situation in their home country and coming to the United States to seek protection, as well as incidents where children were subjected to sort of inappropriate touching by CPB officials. And so the report kind of detailed some of these complaints that children had made and was sort of tracking to see what happened to the complaints after they were made.
And how did the ACLU get the information, the documents that led to these allegations?
So the ACLU's Border Litigation Project, FOIAD, about the Freedom of Information Act, so requested documents from the government through this sort of providing public documents, and they received about 30,000 pages of records relating to children in CPB custody or Customs and Border Protection custody, and have been kind of sifting through this information to sort of put together a report that details what they found by reviewing the report.
And do we have a sense of the scope of this, over how long a period of time, how many agents or agencies were involved? Do we have a sense?
Sure. So the report, I think, covers a period between 2009 and 2014, and part of that period is sort of at the height of the surge. So the surge kind of happened in fiscal year 2014. When I say surge, I'm talking about the large numbers of kids who were crossing the border and seeking protection in 2014. And most of the records that were requested, so when a child crosses the border, they are apprehended by Customs and Border Protection, and CPB usually takes them to a border facility or these temporary detention centers where they are processed. And CPB is trying to figure out, first, how old the person is, two, if the person is from a contiguous country like Mexico or Canada, or from non-contiguous country everywhere else, if the person has been trafficked. And they have 72 hours to transfer that child from their temporary detention centers to the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, so that the Office of Refugee Resettlement can then detain that child until they're able to place them with the sponsor. So this report kind of zones in on the time that child, the 72-hour period where that child is being processed and asked those questions and being held until these preliminary questions can be answered and so they can be transferred into the ORR's custody.
These two stories really highlight the confusion that a lot of people have when it comes to children and immigration. And you did say earlier, Uzumaka, that these children are not guaranteed legal representation. But are there rights that they are guaranteed, whether it's under U.S. law or international human rights law, when these minors are crossing the border unaccompanied or with their parents illegally?
Sure. So when kids come to our country asking for protection, we need to keep them safe while they move through our system. And so under our laws, when a child comes in, one of the things that we've agreed to is that we're going to keep them in the least restrictive environment possible, right? And so we're going to try as much as possible to not detain them for long periods of time and to release them to people like their family members or their family friends, because we feel that that move is in the best interest of the child. We also have, just under our Refugee Act of 1980, which is the law that talks about how people can seek asylum in the United States, people have, if you're coming to the United States, you can ask for asylum. In fact, you cannot get asylum status unless you are in the United States or you are at a port of entry. And so people have a right to ask for asylum, which is, you know, as an immigration attorney, which is what I find a little bit, I can't understand, because I think there's a lot of confusion about people are entering illegally. But when I have a lot of clients who sort of present themselves and ask and say, look, I need help, right? And when someone says, I need help, we should ensure that they're safe while we figure out how to help them. And right now, we're not doing a very good job of keeping families and children safe while we figure out how to help them.
And Uzumaki, when will we know more about this ACLU suit? Is it going to be moving through the courts soon? If you could just answer briefly.
Sure. I think, you know, my understanding is that they're looking at the records right now, and they're working with the University of Chicago to sort of release this information and make people aware of what their findings are. And I'm not so sure about the lawsuit and how it's going to progress.
Well, Uzumaki, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a really complicated topic, and we really appreciate you helping us sort through it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Uzumaki Nzalibe is a clinical associate professor of law at Northwestern University School of Law. She's also a staff attorney with the Children and Family Justice Center of the Bloom Legal Clinic. She joined us today to talk about the rights children have or don't have when they cross the border illegally into the United States. We were focusing in on this topic because there have been recent reports of abuse on the U.S. border, as well as allegations that immigration authorities lost track of some 1,500 children who had crossed over either with parents or unaccompanied and that have been lost track of in the system. That report has been disputed by the authorities. You can let us know what you think about this topic by tweeting us at Central Time WPR. Let us know what you think the next steps in these cases should be.